funded for. I haven't seen one directly related to the folks who they peddled around the true cause of the outages.
It's in there, because if the outages were not planned, if we say that we are the transmitter overloaded and we are reinjecting, then it means that it should have been planned outage. And if it's a planned outage, then the law says that you need to give 3 days notice before you can take out the supply. So they are all linked. And if you take your time and read it, yes, some of the sanctions are actually related to the information we received and how we were not satisfied with the answers.
So is it safe to say that this is priced into the 5.8 million that the directors will have to pay?
Yes, kind of.
And I need to ask you, it's very rare, and Dr. Kamanongo says it's refreshing, it's extremely rare to see PLC bite this hard. You're really biting hard. In fact, to the point where Dr. Kamanongo says he believes the 5.8 is high-handed. You agree?
I think the numbers behind the computation we've demonstrated why we did that. That's the commission's decision, and I think it was well thought through. So let's see how they react to that.
Okay, I say that because in Ghana we know what happens to the PLC and regulators when they bite this hard. Rarely do they bite, if they want to bite at all. But you, that's not biting. You've bitten very hard. You can expect, some may expect, that the system may come after yourselves. Has that been factored in at all, yourselves and the others on the commission?
Evans, yes. I mean, we knew it was a difficult job when we were asked, and we remember some of the things that we were told when we were swearing in that we have a tough work. So there's nothing personal. I mean, we are just enforcing the law, and we need to be sure. We need to make sure that the right things are done. It's nothing personal, and I mean, whatever happens, yeah, we've signed up to do this work as regulators.
You anticipating, are you not, that the political system will react to this?
I mean, I wouldn't even try to get into their minds. But if what we've done, it's based on law, so.
Dr. Kamanongo, you are a politician true and true. Do you believe that the system will allow this to play out until everybody else complies and pays the amount, considering the sheer level of exposure that has now come to this issue? Now we know this is a doom. So more than 4,000 outages. You think the system will sit back and allow this to play out?
Well, I don't know what you mean by the system.
Oh, the
political system.
Are you
talking
system?
Of the executive?
Yeah, the executive. Yes, the executive of government.
PUIC reports directly to the office of the president. It's part of the executive arm, and I doff my hat off for PURC for insisting. Yes, as Ajikunmi said, it was based on the penalty points, but PURC can have the discretion. Instead of 3,000 penalty points, they can lower the penalty points. I want to see how this plays out. ECG directors can appeal. They can appeal to PURC for mitigation, or they can even use the courts. It's important we go through this to develop what I will call good corporate governance practices. But back to the real issue of load shedding, it is important that we agree that at the point where PURC issued these directives, we were load shedding. There was under generation, and so we were rationing power. I can appreciate where the ECG management was coming from, trying to be more political than the politicians, trying to present ECG and the best foot forward. But we owe a duty of care to be factual. both in politics and in public life. And for me, this is so important. And PULC has done a yeoman's job. And I expect all other regulators. You see, regulatory craft is not a beach walk. I always say, and I consistently say that, I've been a regulator before, that any regulator who is loved is probably compromising. Regulatory craft is not a walk on the beach. Regulators, if regulators were up and doing, 50%, in my opinion, of the decisions that politicians, ministers have had to make will not even be there. They won't even arise. So effective regulation. And remember, about 4 years ago, I made a statement on the floor of parliament on regulatory failure in Ghana. And that is why I'm excited. I said this is refreshing to see PULC live up to its obligations and duties as a regulator.
And you make the point I want to just clarify with Ishmael Ejukwumeni. Mr. Ejukwumeni, can the board of directors or any of the entities that you've indicted in your report, can they all appeal? And what is the process for that?
Evans, I think I'll leave that for the legal people to. But I definitely, anybody who is sanctioned should have a right to appeal. I mean, I don't know of any law that would say that you've been sanctioned and you can't appeal. I think the commission's decisions are appealable, including even our decision to set tariffs.
And as we speak, we still are experiencing outages. What are the next steps now? Does that close your regulatory supervision over the ongoing outages, or you can expect a bit more biting going forward as we experience the outages? We still don't have a load management timetable, although I slept in darkness last night.
We are all stakeholders in the industry. We are all working towards a common good. The only problem here is that PRC has been tasked to do a very difficult task where you are supposed to meet competing interests. Okay, so you have consumers at one end, you have the regular utility players at the other end. And how do you balance these two interests and make sure that everybody is happy? We have the board, the commission can be sued by anybody who feels that we are not doing our work properly. They can take us to court for not doing what we are supposed to do. So we will continue to work towards making sure that we play our role as regulators. You sit in the middle as a referee, and you need information to be able to take regulatory decisions and also communicate appropriately. So this is all that we are trying to do, and we hope that we'll be able to continue to do that to make sure that we get reliable supply of electricity and water.
You mentioned water. Many today saw your tough stance on the ECG and asked, well, for areas still experiencing intermittent supply of water, sometimes doesn't come at all, there's no notice. Are we going to see a similar stance taking on the water supply situation by the PRC and how soon?
I'm sure we are almost close to finishing the energy issues, we will turn our attention to water. But all the regulator needs is sufficient information. And then once we get the information and we need to put out the relevant information out there, I mean, we wouldn't have gotten into a sanctioning regime but for everything that has happened within the past couple of weeks.
Thank you very much. And that day is Ishmael Ejukwumeni. He is a commissioner with the Public Utilities Regulatory Commission, also the executive director of KITE, and that is the Kumasi Institute of Technology, Energy and Environment. Earlier you heard Dr. Kwabena Donkor. He's a former power minister and member of the Energy Committee. Still ahead, the Public Utility Workers Union today have a strongly worded statement out about what they call the recent abuse of its Ashanti East regional general manager of the ECG. We'll tell you what they've been saying. Plus, we'll hear from Dr. Steve Mattel on the unfolding issues in the energy sector. On the back of the PURC, a strongly worded report that we've just been detailing for you over the last 30 minutes or so. You want to stay with us for that. And we'll also hear from you. Also tonight on Newsnight, Attorney General's Office begins processes to extradite former CEO of Maslok, Sedina Tamaklo Atiunu, to face justice following a 10-year jail term handed by the Accra High Court. We have details for you on that story as it unfolds. We have exclusives. You want to stay with us. Also tonight, LPG Marketers Association and OMCs reject $80 levy on liquefied petroleum gas as it describes it as highly insensitive and could reverse government's effort to improve LPG use in households.
It's highly price elastic. So once you keep pushing taxes on it, You are indirectly telling Ghanaians that they should stop using LPG and go to the bush and cut firewood and use charcoal for cooking.
More from the energy front as leadership of the Concerned Drivers Association calls the bluff of the Transport Ministry daring the police to arrest them for charging unapproved transport fares.
We that give them the directive, those are the people that they need to arrest.
So they should look for you, the leaders, and arrest you?
Exactly so. And our finding this is not a problem. If they don't know, I can give my GPR address, my house address, my workplace address. Anytime, anywhere, they can come and arrest me.
We'll also hear from some drivers.
Because patrolling out more than 2 years, and 2 years.
You want to stay with us for that and more here on Newsnight. Plus your views, 055-111-1997. And we stay with the issues around power. And if you're just joining us, the PULC has been biting and biting very, very hard at the ECG after they failed to publish a load management timetable to govern the period where they told us that the outages you're experiencing and possibly for which reason you'll be sleeping in darkness was because of overloaded transformers. They failed to produce a load management timetable for that. The Board of Directors of ECG have now been fined 5.8 million CDs and will have to pay that out of their own pockets. But that's not all. The PURC also found that the ECG peddled falsehoods when it blamed the outages on the overloaded transformers. The PURC says it found no evidence to support that. In fact, it says it was factually inaccurate. And as we just heard there from a commissioner at the PURC, it's all part of the sanctions that have now been imposed on the PURC on the ECG. We've been hearing also from Dr. Kwabena Donko, who says the 5.8 million CDs imposed on the directors may be too harsh. I want to hear from you your own thoughts on this unfolding drama in the power sector, even as the doomsaw continues to bite very hard. I want to now bring in, joining me for a conversation on this unfolding issues in the sector, is Dr. Steve Mattel, who is the co-chair of the Ghana Extractive Transparency Initiatives, and joins me right now with his thoughts on this matter. Dr. Mattel, I'm grateful that you could join me. Have you ever seen a PURC not only developing teeth, canines, but biting very hard as it just did to the ECG? And what's your reaction to the opposition?
Thank you, Ivan. On the same subject, PURC is really doing its work and should definitely create any excitement. But the reason it seems to have caught a great deal of public attention is partly because we don't often find the commission protecting the interest of consumers this vigorously. And in this case, directing ECG to issue a power rationing schedule. Now, another reason the issue has caught so much attention is the open defiance of ECG and the company's insistence that it is not studying the law against all the abundant evidence that has been thrown into the public domain, suggesting that we are in a load shedding situation. You see, there's a political dimension which makes it difficult for ECG to admit what seems obvious to all of us. You see, the president has said do so will not happen under his tenure, and that he reserves the legacy of doing so for former President Mahama. How then does he, the appointee of the president, turn around to admit that we are in doing so? Making such admission will hurt the MPP's fortune in the upcoming election, no doubt about that, and will hand over a campaign message to the opposition. And so you find ECG openly defying the regulator without fear of any consequence. And, you know, I suspected that they were not going to comply with a directive to produce a load management schedule. And that was pretty evident in the minister's own comment on the matter. So you can see that the ECG management seemed to have political backing for their action. And that is why we are where we are. When we decide as a people to do politics with power, we make it difficult for proper things to be done to ensure that we are able to enjoy power sustainably.
We heard from Dr. Kamadonko, who believes that the 5.8 million CDs imposed on the board of directors is too high. Do you agree?
Yes. It's not just that it's too high, but I'm wondering how the PURC is going to enforce that decision. How they're going to collect that money. And I sincerely believe that the directors will not comply.
Why do you say that?
You see, the point I make is that there's a political twist to what is happening. And so I suspect that at some point, the powers that be will step in. We shouldn't forget the fact that the ECG management was put in place. At least the managing director was put in place by this president. And it's the same president who put the PRC together, I mean the commissioner. And so if there is infighting or interagency fighting, of course I suspect that the political powers that be will threaten at some point, and it won't come to a point where these hefty fines will be exacted from the director.
I'm grateful that you joined with your thoughts there. That is Dr. Steve Mattel. He is the co-chair of the Ghana Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative, sharing his thoughts on what has been unfolding all day between the PURC and the ECG, and still on the subject of energy. I want to bring you details of a statement that has been issued by the Public Utilities Workers Union, and this specifically has to do with ECG workers. As you know, the ECG has been on a revenue mobilization drive, and we reported it yesterday, broke the news yesterday, that it's Ashanti East Regional General Manager was arrested by the police on Friday after the ECG Task Force from Accra had disconnected the Kumasi Technical Institute for owing 1.2 million CDs. As we now know from the university itself, that it's actually not an accurate picture, because they have remained current and paid all outstanding bills, but that 1.2 million remains legacy debt that the government should pay. And that's part of the reason why that now has been restored. But the manager was arrested, and a statement has now been issued by the workers who are protesting this. And they make the point that they strongly condemn what has happened, and that, quote, it is important to state that the ECG has been given the mandate to distribute power and collect revenue. And since it still operates a credit system, staff of ECG and members of the union shall continue to send demand notices and disconnect customers who refuse to pay for electricity consumed as per the rules of engagement stipulated by PULC. The National Union is strongly against the tendency of persons who wield political power using it to oppress or harass public servants who are carrying out their official duties. We wish to use this opportunity to admonish our political office holders to use tact and decorum in dealing with public servants who are carrying out their legitimate official duty. And that was signed there by the General Secretary of the PU, the Public Utilities Workers Union, Michael Dumatanyantiti, who spoke to us.
We feel that this is very unacceptable. This is somebody, a public servant, doing his official work. And this is not the way he has to be treated in a situation like this. And we think this is most, most unfortunate for a political authority, a whole regional minister, to take such an action against a public servant who is doing his legitimate job. It is a clear case of abuse of power. And we strongly condemn this kind of act by political office holders.
And that there is Michael Gantichi, he is the General Secretary of the Public Utilities Workers Union. So live your news night is on Joy 99.7 FM. And I want to take you to the courts now, where the Attorney General's office is beginning processes to extradite former Chief Executive of Maslock, Sedina Tamaklo Atiunu, to face justice following a 10-year jail term handed by the Accra High Court. Now, Sedina Tamaklo Atiunu was today handed a 10-year jail term for stealing, money laundering, causing financial loss to the state and committing government to lose huge sums of money. Now, the former head of operations of Maslock, Daniel Axim, was also sentenced to 2 years imprisonment in hard labor. Now, contrary to claims that Maslock paid victims of the Cantamanta fire disaster huge sums of money to enable them resettle, it turned out that no amount of money was given to the victims. Now, presiding judge, Justice Ifeasewa Asariboche, says such public officers are worse than armed robbers who rob people and households with AK-47 rifles. Head of our legal affairs desk, Richard Kodonyako, joins me in a studio with more on this, and how did this case start, really, and what really are we learning from the course today?
Well, as we know, that the case started in 2017 when the Economic and Organized Crime Office conducted investigations into the activities of Maslock, and it led them to some startling revelations, including the Cantamanta fire victims, some buses procured by the Maslock, and then some also vehicles, 300 vehicles that were also procured by Maslock. And so this is how the case started.
Okay, and the accused persons, were they in court?
Well, so one was not in court. The former chief executive officer of Maslock, Sedina Atiunu Tamaklo, was not in court. In fact, in the course of the trial, she sought permission for a checkup and not for treatment and never returned. So he went to the United States of America and never returned. But for the other accused person, Daniel Axim, he's been at a trial ever since. And today he sat in court to face the sentence.
Okay, walk us through the particulars of offense.
Well, so we know that Sedina Atiunu Tamaklo and Daniel Axim, they both were working at the Maslock office. And so one is the chief executive officer of that organization and the other was operations manager. And so the investigations that the IOCO conducted revealed that they gave Obatampa Microfinance Company Limited, a tier 2 microfinance company located in Ejira in the Ashanti region, some amount of money, in fact 500,000 Ghana cedis. But based on the interest rate that was prevailing at the time, it was ranging around 1.2 to 2%, but they went to the company and told them that they were giving that amount of money to them at 4%. The company indeed rejected that amount of money and returned the money. But as to who the money went to was a subject of controversy in court. In fact, in court, Sedina Atiunu Tamaklo, during cross-examination, indicated that the signature that was on that sheet looked like hers, but it wasn't hers. But investigations by the Attorney General's office proved that indeed that amount of money went to her, and so she was charged for stealing. If you look at the Cantamanta fire victims, in fact, a committee was set up and Maslock was told or was told to also pay the victim some compensation to enable them resettle. It turned out in court that the victims of these fire disasters were not given anything. They never paid anything to the victims of that fire incident. Again, Maslock indicated that they were going around the country to conduct sensitization exercises. In fact, in court, they failed to prove that they conducted such an exercise. Not even a picture or even their regional offices could even tell the court that indeed that exercise took place. So Evans, we are talking about 90 million Ghana cedis that has been woefully caused to the state. And so that 90 million Ghana cedis. And so pretty shortly I will tell you what the judge has
been. Because that leads us directly there. From what we understand, the judge was furious.
Very, very furious. In fact, I could sum up her words in some strong terms, that if an armed robber comes to your house, the armed robber in Ghana, per her practice, in fact, she began as a prosecutor and then later became a high court judge and then a court of appeal, a justice of the court of appeal. But she has not encountered any incident or any story that says that an armed robber has gone into someone's house and then taken 1 million Ghana cedis. But here we are, people that are knowledgeable, people that have been clothed with power to at least protect the public purse, and they use the power of the pen to steal from the people. And so she begged public officers to spare the people because times are very hard, and for two persons to together cause the state that substantial amount of money was something unthinkable. And so told the AG that the AG has sat down for this long time. When the woman absconded and the woman was declared a fugitive of law, the AG did not through cooperation, extradite the woman to come and face justice. And now that sentence has been handed, is now that the Attorney General's office is saying that they are beginning processes to extradite the woman to come and face justice.
But what is refreshing is that she will be brought down, face the sentence. No problem at all.
Has the process begun already, or are you now going to
begin? We've started the process, and with this judgment, that's going to speed up the process. And you know, Ghana, we have various laws. You can just stay away. But so far as some laws relating to how you can extradite from one country to Ghana, okay, there's a judgment against like this one. Rest assured, that should be brought down. Face justice.
You know that when it comes to extradition, it deals more with the treaty that you have with the country the person is residing in. Can you throw some more light when it comes to the processes with respect to US and Ghana, where she is?
I may not throw us so much for you, but we have the MLA, Mutual Legal Assistance, US, we have that conflict with them. So very soon, you hear about the results. So just rest assured and keep monitoring the space.
But has the state been not been proactive with this? The judge appeared not happy that you had to wait all this while.
I think the state attorneys are here. In the course of the trial, they made it known to the court that the issue of extradition may be tackled. But the preoccupation was to make sure the matter proceeded to finality. And today, we come to that stage. And so we're going to take that next step. When it comes to extradition, sometimes you start and have some kind of problems, blocks. The person may choose to appeal all manner of things, but this is the situation where we have final judgment. It's not as if you are being brought here to be tried, or you can raise all the defense out there that maybe they are going to persecute or whatever, but it's a judgment. And so that's why I said, you hold on. Very soon, she brought down to Ghana to face justice.
What we say to those who say Mr. Azeem has been treated unfairly? I mean, from the traces of money, it's just 20,000 cedis that he received, and that was even a gift.
It matters not. It can be one cedi. Was it properly received? This one is a form of advice and caution to all public office holders that when it comes to monetary matters, you must be very, very careful. You may want to say you received only 20,000 Ghana cedis as a gift. Were you supposed to receive that money? What was that money meant for? We're the one who issued the vouchers, as the court said. So this judgment, I recommend that those of us in public office must procure copies and then read so that we know there is our responsibilities. Because today, you may think that you've not been caught. When you are caught, definitely the law will deal with you as we had it today.
And in fact, prosecution was, as it were, advocating for maximum punishment in relation to the sentencing. If you look at the sentencing that was handed down by the court, are you satisfied with that?
10 years is reasonable in the circumstance. I'm not going to quarrel about it for now, but we'll take the full judgment and read. But 10 years is something that's reasonable in the circumstance. But if need be, that there's a need for an enhancement. Why not? But at the moment, from what we've listened to and what we've learned from the judgment, 10 years is reasonable. And the other accused person also had 5 years cumulatively. So let's see what happens.
The state has been advised to issue for future proceedings. How is the state taking this advice?
We are going to follow it up. Any property that the first accused person has within the jurisdiction or outside jurisdiction, if you get hold of it, we're going to pursue that property and get the money for the state.
By way of clarity, the court says the judgment should be should take place concurrently. Does that apply to the fines?
No, the fines are separate. And if you listen to the judge, some of them had sentences and a fine. So it means that the fines are in addition to the sentences. So we'll look at it carefully and they'll be able to address you on the specifics. Thank you very much.
And that there is the Deputy Attorney General, Afechin Ayiboah, talking to journalists after the verdict was delivered by the court today. But there's a fundamental question, though. The state can try to retrieve part of the money, right?
Yes.
Have they made any moves on this yet?
Well, so according to the Deputy Attorney General, they have started some moves and they are going to attach a property. And so they are now going to sit down and map up a strategy. In fact, the sentencing, it also involves some fines. So when you calculate that of Madam Sedina Atienu's calculation of it, it amounted to 6,500 penalty units, and that sums up to 78,000 Ghana cedis. And so what the court actually indicated was that the second accused, Daniel Axim, he received 20,000 as a gift, and that was his crime. In fact, the court said that the sentence was being handed him for it to serve as a deterrent to public officers, that initially the man was not part of the clique, but along the line he received 20,000, and they asked 20,000 for what, a gift or something. And so for professionals, for accountants, for journalists and all of that, they need to do due diligence and the others before they act.
Thank you very much. And this is a story, obviously, that we'll keep an eye on, even as we've heard from the Attorney General's office that they're beginning processes to extradite the convict in question, said in the Tamaklo, from where we understand she is in the United States of America. Once we get more on this, we'll bring it to you. Now, amidst the vibrant business ongoing in the Tudu market, the streets are strewn with rubbish. As plastic bags and wrappers dance like confetti in the market, it is clear that Tudu market's hygiene is a cause for concern. But who will shoulder the responsibility for this? Mami C. Nyamicha Thompson was there for this episode of Filth Exhibition.
The Tudu market is a buzz with activity. Traders are alert as hawks, seeking to divert shoppers' attention to their wares. On the other side are money changers prowling the streets, looking out for those willing to change their foreign currencies. It is simply another day to make profit. But in the midst of all the chaos, laced on every corner and in front of the stalls, is the rubbish walk of fame. Bags of filth everywhere on the major street. On the side of the major road in the Tudu market is this bag of trash, mainly made up of plastics, bottles and takeaway packs. What is interesting is everybody is going past it and concerned. The market's hygiene has become a cause for concern. But who will take responsibility?
It is the junkies that spill the rubbish on the streets. Those junkies are responsible.
The store owners are responsible for the filth in the markets. What they do is, at the end of business, they push all their rubbish out on the streets.
Even though traders indicate the presence of a few trash cans and payment to the rubbish collectors to collect the filth, these are not the solution to the major loitering in the area. People continue to litter on the streets instead of putting it in the trash cans.
Oh, I'm not paying the over prawn, Martin. I'm not paying the banana ball in here. By a Riano, who's the sub ball and I wouldn't have a beer and film. That's me being here.
When they sweep, there is no dustbin to collect the rubbish. That is why it is littered all over.
That's been in Hano. Eh, me for an answer, waste management for my financial say Guasa. And the Guasa. Because yes, say, I didn't be a quack.
Any dustbin, Waha. Dear, here dustbin. Here dustbin, any dustbin. Dear, here dustbin.
We need dustbins here to take the rubbish. If there was a bigger container collecting all the rubbish, there wouldn't be this much
filled.
Well, until city authorities enforce sanitation bylaws, the plastic bags and wrappers will continue to be scattered about like confetti, posing a threat to the environment and the health of people in the market. Until the next episode, this is Mami Sinyamiche Thompson for Filth Exhibition.
You want to join our campaign, go on to our many social media platforms and share your own filth situation where you live with us. And you might just hear your report played here on Newsnight or shown on our television channel and across our social media platforms. Indeed, this is Newsnight on Joy 99.7 FM. Right up to business, LPG Marketers Association and OMCs reject $80 levy on liquefied petroleum gas as it describes the levy as highly insensitive and could reverse government's efforts to improve LPG use in households. You want to join us for that right after we're done. We're business with James Ishan. Hello, James.
Hi, Vance. In business, oil marketing companies increase prices of petroleum products at the pumps, with Goil selling a litre of petrol at 14 cedis 99 pesos and diesel going for 14 cedis 80 pesos. And the International Monetary Fund warns of further hikes in global oil prices due to current challenges in the Middle East and cautions it could cause inflation to go up in developing countries like Ghana. Business news on Newsnight as brought to you by MTN, Kingdom Books and Stationery, Syntex Tanks, and Pepsodent Charcoal and Airball. Welcome back to Business on Newsnight. I am James Ishan. Let's now settle for the details. And some oil marketing companies have started increasing prices of petroleum products at the pumps in line with the two-week review period. The following report has the details.
Market leader Goil is selling a litre of petrol at 14.99 cedis. Diesel is currently going for 14.8 cedis. Some of the oil marketing companies have attributed the increase to the recent depreciation of the cedi to the dollar. In addition, some stakeholders have blamed the increase on government's decision to reinstate the price stabilization and recovery levy on prices of petroleum products. The reintroduction of the levy imposed 16 pesos on petrol and 14 pesos on diesel. It is also not clear for now whether the decision of the National Petroleum Authority to set a price floor for fuel has also impacted on the prices at the pumps. It is also not clear for now whether the decision of the National Petroleum Authority to set a price floor for fuel has also impacted on the prices at the pumps.
That was a news desk report. Meanwhile, the executive secretary of the Chamber of Petroleum Consumers, Dan Kanamo, is warning that fuel prices could hit 17 cedis a litre if the cedi continues to depreciate against the dollar.
We had along the line at some point indicated it would not be surprising at all if petrol did go past the 17 Ghana cedi mark. If you look at the writings on the wall, where your cedi is struggling, again, international market prices continue to remain bullish. And so you wake up and prices have simply gone up. Again, you have a situation where the third leg, which at this point we should have been reducing, which is the taxes.
Dan Kanamoa is the executive secretary of the Chamber of Petroleum Consumers. Now to some other stories. The International Monetary Fund has warning of further hikes in crude oil prices due to the current geopolitical tension in the Middle East. Oil prices are currently selling at an increased price of $90 as a barrel due to fears of current Israel and Gaza strike escalating into the region. But IMF in its latest assessment is warning of oil prices could increase by as much as 15% if the current development does not end soon. Speaking at the launch of the Global Economic Report, Director of Research Pierre Olivier said the development is not good for a lot of developing countries recovering.
This is something that we explored in our report. We looked at a scenario where we would have more geopolitical tensions that would result in elevated oil prices and energy prices and shipping costs. And what we find is that this would lead to higher price pressures in the global economy. There would be higher inflation, there would be lower output, and roughly the estimates we have for a sustained increase in oil prices by about 15% would be an increase in inflation globally of about 0.7%.
Now let's do some tax-related stories, as the Ghana Revenue Authority has been on a course to educate stakeholders on the tax amendment laws which waived penalty payment on non-tax complaint individuals who volunteered their tax information. The move is expected to boost voluntary payment and support revenue mobilization. Assistant Commissioner of the Audits at the Large Tax Office, Dr. Martin Kubil Yamboriga, has been explained to Joy Business after addressing stakeholders on its tax and good governance mandate in Accra.
As a means to encourage people to voluntarily comply, we amended the Section 74 of the Revenue Administration Act that if, as a taxpayer, you have discovered that information that you have earlier on provided to the Ghana Revenue Authority is not accurate, or information that you should have provided you have not provided, and then you, on your own volition, decide to come and then disclose that information to the Commissioner General, then the benefit is that any penalties that could have been imposed on you, either monetary or imprisonment, you are given a waiver of that. So we want to encourage people. And this is something that is not just like a one-off amnesty. It is something that we have incorporated into the law that at any time, a taxpayer can always take advantage of that.
Dr. Martin Kubil Yamboriga is Assistant Commissioner of Audit at the Large Tax Office. Finally, Leshego Ghana Savings and Loans has listed its latest bond on the Ghana Stock Exchange to the value of 100 million cedis. This is the first issuance under the expanded of 500 million cedis medium-term note program. Country Chief Executive Officer of Leshego, Ni Amankrate, spoke to Joy Business on the floor of the Ghana Stock Exchange after the listing.
And what this means for us is that we can get funding that makes a little bit more sense, which we can put into our business operations and allow us to also lend at more reasonable rates than we would have at the current rates that are in the market. So programs like this definitely help us bring our interest rates closer to what is reasonable. That's fantastic for us. So programs like this are really important for the financial services space, especially in the savings and loans markets.
Ni Amankrate is the country chief executive officer of Leshego, and that ends it for business on Newsnight with me, James Ishen. Over to you, Evans.
Thank you very much. So live your Newsnight is on Joy 99.7 FM. We are back with more. You're still live here on Newsnight. It's on Joy 99.7 FM. Now, the LPG Marketers Association and the oil marketing companies are tonight collectively rejecting an $80 levy on liquefied petroleum gas that will ensure that your prices will go up even further. The National Petroleum Authority, in a statement late last month, introduced the new $80 bottling plant and cylinder investment margin on all LPG products, directing all petroleum marketing companies to pay the levy into a dedicated account effective as April 2024. But OMCs and LPG Marketers Association are rejecting the new levy, describing it as insensitive. James Avergis with me in the studio with details from the statement they've issued. And let's start with the LPG Marketers Association. They're raising some allegations that this levy is a replacement for the price stabilization recovery levy.
Yes, Evan. So they start by first breaking down the components of this $80. They say $44 out of that is going to the bottling plant and $35 is allocated to the cylinder investment margins. They say that when the price stabilization and recovery levy was in place, they charged some 14% per liter as levy at the pump. But this has been replaced by the new levy, which translates into some 1 cedi 20 pesos per liter at a pump.
Okay, and what are the demands of the NPA?
They said that the government's, first of all, their main objective of introducing the cylinder recirculation model in 2017 was to make sure that at least 50% of Ghanaian households revert to using LPG by 2030. 2030. Their fear is that this may not be achieved because this new levy, for instance, will again lead to increase in LPG prices at the pump. They said, for instance, your 60 kg cylinder, which you fill at approximately some 100 cedis, and 14.5 kg, which sells at around 240 cedis, would increase by some 7.5%. And so the fear is that, one, it could lead to Ghanaians, most ordinary Ghanaians, not being able to afford the LPG, and two, they'll be compelled to revert to the firewood and the charcoal that they used to.
They want the MPA to reverse this.
Exactly. They describe the move as a misplaced misuse of the fees and charges. They are demanding that the MPA should call for negotiation to relook at this. And this is a position that is also shared by the OMCs as well.
Oh, they have also issued a separate letter to the MPA on this.
Exactly. They raised similar concerns and calling that they needed to be brought to the negotiation table to relook at this, to avert the implication of all of this on the prices of petroleum products, LPGs.
Listen to the Vice President of the LPG Marketers Association, Gabriel Kumi, on the subject.
The LPG industry downstream is one of the few, very, very, very few Ghanaian-owned industries we have in this country. In Ghana now, even Bayer Ayakshi and Kelewele and Bobe are being taken over by the Chinese. All the industries, even retail industries, have been taken over by foreigners.
Mm.
The LPG industry have been built and maintained over the past 25 to 30 years by indigenous Ghanaians. So this is an industry that we expect government to come up with policies to protect, because it's 100% Ghanaian owned. But rather we see government taking certain actions which is really, really fighting against the survival of the LPG industry. So we have, for the past 6-7 years, we have consistently and persistently said that all taxes on LPG must go, because we believe LPG must be made tax-free.
Mm.
This is a product that serious countries like Côte d'Ivoire are indeed subsidizing LPG. But in Ghana, with the imposition of this new tax, you will be paying more than 20% tax on LPG. And this is a product that government intends to promote its usage. And you know, this is a mass product. This is a product that is used by the ordinary Ghanaian. So it's highly price elastic. So once you keep pushing taxes on it, you are indirectly telling Ghanaians that they should stop using LPG and go to the bush and cut firewood and use charcoal for cooking.
And that there is Gabriel Kumi, the Vice President of the LPG Marketers Association of Ghana. Now, related to this is the ongoing tussle over new fares, because the price of petroleum products are going up and the drivers want to charge the fares that they believe will be an accurate reflection of what you're spending on input. Now, the Concerned Drivers Association has called the bluff of the Transport Ministry, urging members to go ahead and charge 20% new transport fares. The ministry has, in a statement, directed all drivers to halt their plan to charge the unapproved fares, and in fact asked the police to be on the lookout for drivers who go ahead and impose these fares on their passengers. The driver unions across the country have proposed at least 30% increase in fares, citing rising petrol prices and cost of spare parts. Before the GPRTU and government could reach an agreement, there are reports of some drivers charging the fares. Now listen to some of them on why they cannot wait any longer.
It's not fair. It's not fair, but because we have not been authorized to increase fares. So I think anybody who increases the fare is illegal. So I think the law must deal with that person, that union or that organization, until we hear from the right authorities. They should give us some fine percentage so that we increase, because things have gone up. The petrol is high, the spare parts are also high. So our expectation is that they should give us a fair deal.
The need to arrest them. They cannot increase the fares when there hasn't been any official communication from authorities. When it happens that way, there will be inconsistency in the system.
So person with just sika o pebiano, own quantity at you.
Yatu petrol in the say to your fame. Because petrol
you can buy fuel. We can buy spare parts. But your car owners will be expecting you to make huge sales to them. That is why we increase the fares. We run at a loss every single day.
Oh, because petrol you have 2 months more than 2 years. Yeah, 2 months. They say you have 2 months. They say in paying for a month for a friend, my yeah, so you book
Well, some drivers there, and they are mixed views there. I want to bring in the David Agbado. He's a national PRO of the Concerned Drivers Association. You're going to be part of the meeting tomorrow. I want to bring him in right now. Thank you, David, for your time here on News 90. So you saw the director from the Transport Ministry to the police that they should be on the lookout for drivers who are charging unapproved fees. The intention there is to arrest them if they find them. What's the situation as we speak? Have any of your members been arrested?
No. Okay. Because the directive is not from the Ministry of Transport.
I saw the statement. It's from where?
We don't know. You know, we are doing administration. If a letter is from one administration going to administration, there must be a reference number that tells you this is the 5th or 10th or 100th letter going to this administration. It is not there. When they say it's from this office, like a letter from our outfit, Concerned Drivers Association of Ghana's outfit, you have my secretary number or my chairman or myself, my number or my signature behind it. Ask or check very well the letter out there, that who is the signature, who is the signature to that letter.
Do I hear you say that as far as you're concerned, then you're going ahead to charge new fares?
Exactly so. We are charging the 20%. We started it on Saturday. We still continue taking it.
Are you in this meeting tomorrow? We understand have been called to try and negotiate an outcome, a fair that will be fair to all parties.
Joy, this is Joy, isn't it?
Yes.
Let me make it clear to every Ghanaian that there is no anywhere in the Constitution that tells us that if we are about to increase transport fare, we should go to the Transport Ministry. But rather, it is in DPRTU's Constitution, 2K, clause 2K, when you read it, it is there that it is stated that if DPRTU is about to increase transport fare, you must go to the appropriate government authority, clause 2K of DPRTU Constitution. But Ghanaian Constitution and the Constitution of the Republic of Ghana doesn't tell us that if we are about to increase transport fare, we must go to the Ministry of Transport.
Yes, but we understand from the GPL to you last week that there's a meeting that has been called tomorrow. Is that happening?
It's happening tomorrow, yes.
Okay, you'll be part of this meeting?
We will be part. But to be frank and honest with you, it is not... I'm not prophesying, but there will not be a meeting tomorrow. Seriously, because those that have to be at the meeting are not in the country at the moment. So who are we going to meet with as transporters? The transporters will be there, but those who we are going to meet, they are not there. So who are we going to meet with?
Okay. We'll see. We'll keep an eye on this. This is one that affects every life. When the transport fares go up, it affects everything else, including the price of food that you buy on the market. David Agbado is a national PRO, Concerned Drivers Association. And you can call it a season of strikes and demonstrations, and you won't be wrong. Today, the rotational nurses and graduate unemployed nurses joined forces and hit the streets to demand two things. The government pay those working and unemployed and employ those stuck at home after graduating from school between 2020 and 2022. Well, this morning, they took their frustration to the streets, making stops at the health and finance ministries as well as parliament, where petitions were presented to the respective bodies. Listen to Sarah Mensah, a spokesperson for the Graduate Unemployed Nurses and Midwives Association, and Anthony
Amebile Kwame Jr., president of the Rotational Nurses and Midwives Association.
We have been in the house without working. As we discussed with you inside, it has been written in this sheet I am presenting to you as a petition to find out when exactly are we going to get our employment, and if truly you have our documents here, how are we going to be employed?
Well, the Finance Ministry, they got this reaction from the Public Relations Officer of the Ministry, Emmanuel Bwachiansa.
Had fruitful discussions with your leaders, and on behalf of the minister and management, I would like to say that thank you so much for your patience. So we will forward your request to management, and whatever the outcome will be, we will let you know. But we also want to state that government is serious about employment issues, and so everything in the budget, in this petition, will be made known to management. Thank you, and we want to also assure you that we are working together to ensure that each and every one of us is happy at the end of the day.